There's a lot of people running their mouth that don't stay the night, never come through town. And some other people running about that don't take the time to suss you out. Still some of us every night we make a toast to you, like isn't it nice that the body and the presence of mind is big old for you. Let there be light.
Let's go to the Zoom line and bring in Joe Sinnott from Winning Partners as I want to find out his take on an article that came across my desk. Does your company need a chief ESG officer? ESG, environmental, social, governance. How you doing, Joe Sinnott?
I'm doing fine and dandy today, Jason. How about yourself?
Pretty good. I've been having weird, like, go to sleep 3 hours, 4 hours here, up for a while, and then back to sleep. So I'm having these kind of weird sleep cycles, but that's all right. We'll get her hammered out. Spring, man, that's how it goes.
So well, almost spring. The spring weather almost feels like your sleep cycles. It's up, it's down. It's going to be 70 here this weekend in Pittsburgh. Then it's going to be dropping down back into the 20s with some snow. So, you know, that volatility, whether it's the energy industry or sleep cycles or the weather, I think it's part of life sometimes.
No, I think a lot of companies are experiencing that. I just talked to somebody the other day that they're so busy, they can't grow. I thought, well, that's interesting. Yeah, we're so busy, we can't grow. And I have been there before. And I talked to some other people where they just don't know either. And then I see these things come across where, you know, does your company need an ESG officer? It just reminds me of the world we're living in. We do have new job titles being created. We do have new jobs that are just being carved out completely because of this just new economy that we're living in. Of course, now we've got a war going on. So we've got an energy industry that's going to create a whole new side industry within a side industry. So if you want to address the new jobs that are popping up because of the new world we live in, that's fine. Or what do you think about this ESG movement and whether somebody should have an ESG officer?
Well, I mean, in terms of the movement itself, obviously, the first thing is what is ESG? Because, you know, it doesn't take much digging to realize it means everything, right? I mean, everything touches ESG. So when you talk about different titles, it's like, all right, well, what is an ESG officer? How is that different from, you know, a chief risk officer or a chief compliance officer? And some of these things are mentioned, you know, in that article. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily do a good job of explaining the difference. So honestly, Jason, it comes back to, can we actually have some clear definition around, you know, what ESG is versus sustainability versus risk versus compliance versus all of these other things that companies are already doing, in many cases already have titles for, which again comes back to the headline of the question, does a company really need another chief executive that is essentially in charge of everything? If, you know, if you take that view of ESG, which is, yeah, ESG is pretty much anything. I mean, there's nothing you do in your daily life that can't be connected in some way to the environment, to society, and obviously to some rules and regulations or governance, if you will.
Now you sound like somebody in the marketing department that I've been in the past. What do you mean marketing touches everything? I mean, it's true. You know, there's certain departments that does. You touch everything in a roundabout sort of way. And so when I look at like the ESG, that's, you know, you skim the article quick, you look at other articles. You know, at the end of the day, sure, you can reverse engineer an article and checklist and, yeah, okay, here's an article, guys, make sure it gets happened. Well, some of this ESG stuff, I do see the value in bringing in an ESG officer almost in the same way an IT officer was brought in during this technology revolution so that somebody could understand a website, an email, an intranet versus an intranet. You know, I mean, there was that debate for a while. Should we just have a website for just us or should we open it up to the world? So there's this ESG thing. There's so many principles. There is a value probably that somebody that can navigate through the good principles and the bad principles, which ones are going to actually apply to a company that can actually use them. I mean, there's probably a lot of energy companies that are thinking, hey, let's do X, Y, and Z. When the CEO's like, yeah, right, physics don't allow that, pal. I mean, so there's only so much you can do. So on one hand, I do see the value of it. But on the other hand, a lot of this stuff is just checklists and make sure your company does it.
Correct, which is fine if you acknowledge that and if you call that out, because at the end of the day, yeah, we do have to comply. I mean, it does come down to risk in many cases, and which is why, again, it's interesting to see companies that will differentiate between ESG and risk, because even the big financial institutions, when they talk about responsible investing and ESG investing, you know, it's first and foremost to make money, but they believe the best way to protect your investments is to acknowledge the risks that could pop up from an ESG standpoint. So again, you know, the reason that some companies who will happily add a new C-suite title, a chief ESG executive, the reason that some of those companies aren't going to have success, Jason, is because, again, they're afraid to be blunt about what that job is. It's not necessarily to, you know, do the right thing, which, again, all these companies want to do. It's to protect the strategy. It's to protect their ability to operate. It's to protect their ability to make money for their various shareholders, or, you know, their various stakeholders, if you want to go, you know, 2-3 degrees down the line. So, again, the biggest issue I have is when you have these high-level flowery articles that can leave you thinking that, you know, a chief ESG officer is more like a chief marketing officer, like you said a couple minutes ago, right? You know, is this just polish, and is this just checking the boxes, and is this just sounding good? Because if that's the case, Jason, if that's really the case, then you're setting up this chief ESG officer, or whatever that would be, CESGO, you know, you're setting them up to fail, quite honestly, because people are going to start asking, well, how are you any different from, you know, the chief executive officer? Because the CEO's job is to, you know, ideally connect things together, to, you know, to recognize when, you know, things are misaligned and to help have people in place to align them. Well, now you have this ESG person, which, again, in an ideal world is also sort of a chief connection officer, bringing people together, helping ensure that, you know, people are aligned and different groups are aligned. So, again, once you start saying, well, how is this person really that much different from what, you know, his or her boss is supposed to be? Again, people are just going to start questioning it, and you're setting up that person for a lack of success, at least in my opinion and observations.
Excuse me, I had to cough there. I'm trying to, you know, compare it, because I'm a human, and so I naturally compare and categorize and judge, right? Because, like I said, I'm a human, and being self-aware, apparently I'm not human because I'm admitting it. But anyway, joke for a different day. The technology angle. The technology angle is a pretty good one. A new science, or a new methodology, a new ideology that's going to come into your establishment, almost in an intangible way. Because really, you know, ones and zeros to a lot of people, that's just magic. I mean, nobody understands how that works. So it even though it is really a tangible service or a tangible thing, it almost becomes intangible in the beginning, because nobody can see the wireless internet, but then you do see the internet. You know what I mean? It's kind of like a magic, tangible, intangible thing. So the ESG, I'm almost looking at it a little similar, because it's on the surface, it is so intangible. Like You're talking, I almost said chief emotional officer in some cases. You know, a lot of this stuff is very emotional, as far as what the business world used to call, that's emotional stuff. That's go to the kitchen and make me a pie there, chief ESG officer. So the oil and gas is known for a patriarchal industry. A lot of this ESG stuff is that intangible social, emotional side of things. What do you make of that, really, when some of it is a little bit on that intangible subjective side, but in the end, that business is probably going to see some sort of intangible product, much like how the wireless internet came about, you know? Did that make any sense?
It does, at least if you view what an ESG officer should be, as I do, which is somebody who can recognize all of those connections between various initiatives and, in some cases, you know, competing priorities within a company. Because a lot of those connections, Jason, are intangible, or they're hidden, or if not, you know, invisible, you know, talking about wireless technology. And so a chief ESG officer, or whatever you want to call that person, his or her job should be to identify those connections, see where those connections are faltering, or where they're eroding, or where they don't exist at all, and know, determine one, do those connections really matter? And two, if they do, you know, build them up and strengthen them. And some of those connections are based on emotions, Jason. So again, you hit the nail on the head. Some of them are those intangible connections between your employees and the overall company mission. Do they understand the mission? This article itself, you know, it points to the fact that, what was it, 9 out of 10 people would happily take a pay cut or a lifetime earnings cut to have more meaning at work. Well, again, you can quantify the lifetime earnings hit, if you will, but how do you quantify the meaning, the purpose? So absolutely, an ESG officer who can come in and, you know, really identify and in best cases, quantify those connections, recognize the ones that are hurting or non-existent, that can absolutely add bottom line value. But again, that requires getting underneath the surface. What I see in some cases is these ESG officers put in place, again, at a surface level. And they might not be given the real authority to go multiple levels down. And certainly they might not be given the buy-in, or they might not have the buy-in from everyone else to go down those multiple levels to see those hidden connections. And again, if they're not doing that, and if they're not communicating what their purpose is, again, it's not going to work. So coming back to what you said, absolutely there's value. Some of it is, you know, more difficult to quantify or to see, but if it's done properly and it's communicated properly, especially to internal stakeholders, especially to employees, mm-hmm. then it could absolutely add value. But you just can't leave employees. And again, I see it all the time. You can't leave them wondering, all right, what's this person's job? Are they just there to meddle in my business and improve things vaguely? No, you need to boil it down to things that actually matter to those individuals, which again, can be emotional, could be related to passion, purpose, and all those things that can get a little flowery again, especially for an industry mm-hmm. like the energy industry, which is not necessarily known for its fluffiness and floweriness.
No, it's really known for its science. And, you know, I mean, we joke about, or we don't joke, we've talked about the patriarchal just vibe that the industry has, and we don't have to get into that because it's there and they are trying to change it. I think the ESG is actually going to really help that in a lot of ways, open up some different ideas and methodologies and ways of that the industry just hasn't thought of before, because they are very science-based. And unfortunately, you know, more men can lift 1,000 pounds than women and things like that, you know? So traditionally, because of just the whole science and the physical and the geography and everything, a lot of men were attracted to that industry because they could actually physically do that kind of work. Well, we live in a different world now where robots are taking over, man. I mean, robots are doing a lot of the work. They're doing a lot of the setup where we have to look at the place differently, because a lot of times the way we did stuff in agriculture and in energy was to basically save lives. Shut up, do it that way or you're dead. And so again, now we've got robots and we've got new practices and innovations that have changed everything. You know, I don't need to play Atari anymore. I can actually put on an Oculus and hang out with ET. I don't have to have some crappy 2 pixel blocks stack on top of each other, trying to pretend this is, you know, Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark. No, I can actually put something on. So, you know, times change, folks. So the energy industry, I think, is finally understanding that the industry has changed. Coal industry figured it out when it was too late. And that's why I'm bringing this up, because I think the energy industry, if they don't get a hold of this sooner rather than later, they're going to become coal. And coal used to have 30 some people mining at each mountain. Now they got like 6, you know? Mm-hmm. So your thoughts on just the integration with the ESG, because it's here and it's better to control than react.
Yeah. Well, I think what you just said speaks to something that's going to resonate with everybody. And again, that is the word risk. We talked about it at the outset. A chief risk officer who can help identify risks to, again, employees, whether you're going to have a job in X number of years, you know, to the industry itself, you know, that resonates with people, Jason. So yeah, the fact that, yeah, things are getting more automated, you know, clearly that might mean less jobs, or at least, you know, less direct jobs. Clearly, again, people need to build the robots and maintain the robots. But when you're speaking in those terms, all right, now you got people's attention. And then even in terms of technology itself, you know, technology obviously can do lots of great things, but things become more automated. But again, coming back to some of those intangible conversations, some of the emotional things, a chief ESG officer in many ways should be there to identify gaps between these new processes, these new technical processes, these in some cases, these rules and regulations, and you know, the gaps between those and what people are actually doing. Because those gaps are huge, Jason. And you know what? There's no AI out there that's going to see those gaps. It's going to be conversations. It's going to be, you know, sitting down with individual stakeholders and actually identifying what it is that they're doing and thinking, and then weighing them against these new and, again, to your point, evolving processes and procedures that are adapting with technology. So again, it comes back to an ESG director, chief, manager, whatever, helping to identify where those gaps exist. And those gaps are only going to grow. Yeah.
Right now, with the Russian invasion, the Ukraine-Russian war, whatever it's being labeled, the ESG officer would be in every single one of those meetings, probably with the chief financial officer as companies are divesting from Russia. This is one of those things that would come up where the ESG officer would be busy as heck right now, trying to figure out, does our company invest in Russia? You know, that because that's the social vibe right now. That's the thing. And so that is something your ESG officer would have to say, okay, Mr. CEO, almost like an analytics guy on a two-point conversion now, the Pittsburgh Steelers, 4th and 1, do we go for it? Go to the analytics guy. What do we do? That's almost what an ESG officer is going to be in some areas. They got to kind of break down the analytics of public relations and finance and environmental impact and how our shareholders are going to react when they find out that Putin owns 20% of our company or whatever the case might be. So I think that's a lot of what we're talking about right now is a great example with the war on what an ESG officer would do.
Yeah. How are all those things connected to that company's ultimate mission, ultimate goal, ultimate objectives, and you know, its bottom line. So yeah, I think that's a great summary looking at everything. And again, there's that word again, looking at everything and figuring out, you know, how, if they are connected, but how are all those things, whether it's geopolitics, whether it's commodity pricing, whether it's the environment, the weather, how are all those things connected? Do they matter? And quite frankly, you know, playing a referee at times. And again, I think this article hits on that, right? Clearly, we talked about this a couple of minutes ago, lots of companies internally have competing priorities, competing goals. So, you know, is the ESG officer there as a tiebreaker, if you will? And if he or she is, again, that's a good thing. But if the ESG officer is off in their own world doing their own thing and is seen as disconnected from all of these things, which can happen, right? You know, again, if it's all surface level and it comes across as just, hey, we're checking a box. We've got a chief ESG officer. You know, some large companies, they might have, you know, 40 people on their sustainability teams. All good stuff. But how connected are they really to, one, the ultimate goals of the company, and two, the sub goals of, you know, dozens of potential departments? And again, that's where it's a big, you know, it depends answer to the question of this article, which is, you know, does a company need an ESG officer? Well, again, it depends on what that person is actually going to be doing and how well defined it is.
I'm going to look at the time here, and I'm thinking about a few things here. And when I think of these articles with these ESG officers, 90% of them will probably just be another yes person. They'll just be another person to show up at the meeting, do the busy work, and give the results. And then once a year, they get yelled at because they didn't get the marks and they got to go in this new direction. That's generally how yes people operate. They you know, enable, and then they got to go run around fearfully to try to make up for what they just overlooked. So the other one is kind of that disruptor wild card. And I think there's a lot of them right now with the small businesses going under. I think a small business owner would be a really good ESG officer because they are in tune to so many different departments. Like in the media world, a newspaper publisher rarely only did one thing. Usually they put him in circulation for a while so he could understand how the newspaper carriers work and the coupon circulation. And then they'd put him in sales for a while so he could understand how that mess works. And then he put him in editorial. Even if he didn't have any editorial, at least he'd job shadow somebody for a while. You know what I mean? You got to, somebody has to be experienced in so many different areas to understand. So if somebody's going to say, hey, you know what, marketing person, a lot of this stuff kind of looks like stuff that you should be doing anyways. So now the chief marketing person is now your chief ESG officer. I think that's a mistake because your chief marketing person probably isn't aware of some of the financial things that a business owner would be aware of, wouldn't have the same intuition or the regular connectivity. I know a lot of times, I can't tell you how many meetings I've gone to where apparently they thought I should have been in the 15 meetings earlier because the five of them in the room, they start acting like I should have been there. I should have been there. They start, you know what I mean? It's like I start getting rejected because I wasn't part of the previous meetings that I wasn't invited to. And so it's a weird thing. And so that's one of the things I like to say about this ESG thing is I honestly think a small business owner that like just went out of business or got bought out or whatever the case is, you know, someone who's like quasi-retired or really focused, trying to, you know, get the out of debt that he just put himself and his family into and that sort of thing. So that's my two cents. You might want some change. That's fine. But just, you know, kind of in summary, wrapping up a little bit, you know, if somebody's going to look internally at naming their chief internal executive ESG officer, whatever this new thing is, talk a little bit about that, you know, because a lot of people do like to hire within, but sometimes that might not always be the best case, especially in the world of yes people and also groupthink, if you will.
Yeah, that's a great point, Jason, because I think depending on the size of the company, I echo your sentiments that somebody who has run a business very much has all the characteristics of somebody you would want as a chief ESG officer. And there's a good chance that internally you might not have that person who has that full view. Because, again, like we talked about earlier, you know, there could be a lot of confusion between, you know, the chief ESG officer and the chief executive officer. Isn't their job not basically the same, right? To see all kinds of things. So to that end, Jason, I think if you're upfront, if it's a company, again, given, you know, depending on the size, if you're upfront that you see this chief ESG officer or chief sustainability officer or chief risk officer or whatever as essentially a stepping stone to the CEO of that organization, and they're going to have the resources and the authority to act like that, and that's part of your succession plan, you know, honestly, Jason, that could work because that person, you know, like any succession plan, likely now has the full support and is tied very closely to the CEO who likely possesses the skills that are necessary for a chief ESG officer. So again, some of that depends on the size of the company. In terms of, you know, bringing in external help, I think, you know, the biggest thing that external help can provide is that, you know, independent ability to identify some of those connections. Because, you know, I know, everybody knows, you know, when you're just dealing with people internally, it's very difficult sometimes to see where those connections are failing, how things are connected, you know, competing priorities. Whereas you bring in somebody from the outside, you know, they're going to ask, they're typically, they're going to be better at asking the right questions. So again, another big depends answer, but I think a lot of it speaks to the size of the company, sort of what their, you know, succession plans already are, because an ESG position could be a great way to groom a future CEO if that person is given the right resources so that, again, whatever deficiencies they might have in terms of their knowledge of, again, marketing, their knowledge of accounting, their knowledge of human resources, you know, if they're in a position of authority where they can get that support internally or externally, then I think they're much more likely to succeed in this position. And again, much more likely to be tapped for future CEO position, either at that company or perhaps at another one.
Several years ago, I used to have a friend of mine work at an ad agency, and three, maybe four times he called me for a meeting consultant. I thought, well, this is weird. Okay, so it's like a 2-hour consulting gig. Okay, I'll pay in the bills, you know, single father, the whole thing, show up. Well, within 30 seconds, you know, pretty much the first thing out of my mouth, not 30 seconds, I'm quiet, you know, after the hello, how are you, the pleasantries, we get into it. First, every time, first thing out of my mouth, first question, boy, the temperature in the room drops about 90 degrees. Just got cold as can be. And of course, I could read the room. So I realized this really quick. After the third, like I said, the third or the fourth, I talked to my buddy. I said, are you just inviting me to point out the elephant in the room? And he goes, you figured it out, huh? And that's the total 100% reason he brought me into the meeting is he knew that I was Kramer from Seinfeld. I don't have any problem sticking my foot in my mouth. I what I see comes out, there's almost zero filter. So he's like, hey, I got a guy that can really, really solve the problem that I need. He can hit those areas that I can't. He can point out the elephant in the room because he knew in order to keep his job, he had to be a yes man. Mm-hmm. So I think he's not alone out there. There's probably a lot of people out there that do realize they are a yes person. When a lot of this ESG movement is created because there are too many yes men out there, yes women out there. Sorry, yes men, you were the ones who created the stereotype. So it slips out every now and then. My he, she, him, her gender stuff, I'm still learning, so I do apologize to those people out there. But kind of as we wrap up here, Joe, what are your thoughts about that a little bit, about what I said, you know, about my friend who literally would invite me to point out the elephant in the room?
Yeah, well, I mean, this might sound somewhat self-serving, but I mean, that is what I do for a living as a coach. You know, I mean, that's
just like, you know, quiet. This is my whole strategy.
Well, look, I mean, clearly having somebody there that can observe, listen, and then ask questions, but be completely independent and not have to worry about, you know, getting fired or again, you know, just not rocking the boat. There's tremendous value in that. And again, that applies in any aspect of anyone's life, right? Personal, professional, you know, having somebody come in and essentially, you know, do an intervention, if you will, you know, that's powerful. Again, if it's done properly. Now, there are times where, yeah, bringing somebody in that completely changes the tone of a meeting or, as you say, you know, drops the temperature. Obviously, that could have, you know, the opposite impact. But when you have somebody,
especially don't tell the guy.
Well, that's it. Well, yeah. But, you know, best case scenario, you're open and honest about what an external resource is, whether it's a coach, whether it's a consultant, whether it's an advisor, whatever. But, you know, you're open and honest that, hey, look, this person is here to help us do things better, to see things that we can't see, to get underneath the surface. And again, if you're bringing in somebody that can be trusted and that can speak the same language and that has, you know, been in the shoes of some of these participants, well, again, then that person isn't just there to, you know, be there to call out the elephant in the room, but to truly partner with these people so that they are better. You know, they have a more, you know, sustainable impact on the company, if you will, you know, and everybody gets better. So it's not just coming in and, you know, with a clipboard and saying, all right, these three people sitting in this meeting are useless and we're going to can them. No, that is an approach that someone might take. But no, Jason, clearly having an external voice who can be trusted, who is speaking the same language, you know, who is independent, that adds a lot of money and, you know, saves a lot of time and induces a lot of trust. And most importantly, can help check a lot of these boxes when it comes to environmental, social, and governance related issues within a company.
Well, how can people give you some business, good sir, as we talk about all these different ways to change people's lives? Let's give people a reason to give you some business. How can they reach out and et cetera?
LinkedIn is always a good spot. Joe Sinnott, S-I-N-N-O-T-T, or on the internet at Witting Partners, W-I-T-T-I-N-G partners.com.
Sad to behold, nothing you could do will make me go. We'll let the world judge what they don't know. Giving me a heartbeat, making me never wanna leave. But let the world judge, cause they don't see. 5,000 candles, 5,000 candles burning bright. On the light you could endure. 5,000 candles, sit right. Night, 5,000 candles. 5,
me, it's finally a phase, and then soon enough I'll see that I'm crazy for loving you the way that I do. Because who could love somebody like you? They say you're too damn small, and I won't pretend it don't matter at all. But no matter what the trouble ahead, I still won't regret this time that I spent. Sad to behold, nothing you could do would make me go. We'll let the world judge what they don't know. Giving me a heartbeat, making me never wanna leave. We'll let the world judge, cause they don't see. 5,000 candles, 5,000 candles burning bright. All the lights you could handle, 5,000 candles see right.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's give it up for Elma Cook.